Revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. Liberty Talk FM.
It's a marvelous night for a moon dance with the stars up above in your eyes. A fantabulous night to make romance neath the cover of October skies. You know the leaves on the trees are falling to the sound.
What's up? What's up, everybody? Welcome aboard to the Bubba Show. Welcome back from the weekend, and here we go again. And can you say the words panic, puke, in Japan, all in the same sentence? Well, that's exactly what they did on Thursday night, Friday morning. And Friday was to, once again, panic. So after over 25 years of trying to manipulate markets and do their version of financial engineering, and after Kuroda said at Davos that, well, we're not going to go to that negative rate interest rate policy. What do? They go to the negative 8 interest rate policy. And of course, I guess Kuroda thought he was one of the baseball managers or football owners saying, giving a vote of confidence to his people and saying, hey, no worry, nothing to do. We're all good and we're going to continue. And of course, we can see that that is not the case, as they went to the major nuclear weapon and are going to continue to try to maneuver and manipulate asset classes to make sure that they get growth. And I just wondered what would happen if they had done nothing and let the markets take care of it. But of course, that would have been much too simple of a solution. And of course, we know that these politicians have to justify their jobs. They have to justify how they're going to stay in. And of course, you've got to make sure that you've got money that you can give it away and play with it. It makes absolutely no sense. Absurd in every step of the say of the word. And I don't get it. But hey, who am I? I'm just a guy trying to, you know, hang out and, you know, have some fun. And, you know, I guess I'm not the economist, because certainly what I've seen from central banks over the years, but especially in recent history, is absurd. It's beyond the question of, you know, unreasonable. But, you know, Shinzo Abe tried to force the action, and of course, here we are. So when you look at the overall picture and you see a big rally like you saw on Friday, and, you know, look, that's a short covering rally. Now, that doesn't mean that it won't turn into something from there, but you could see even by the galloping at the end was a chase up, was a get me out, I don't care what I pay. And of course, you'll hear everybody talking about that, how great the markets is and how, what ownership is like. And, you know, you have to remember that, you know, when you hear and listen to the experts out there, their job is to sell you on the idea of being in the market, because that's where they make their money. Now, I'm not saying everybody's like that, but what I'm telling you is that the overall picture is simple. Okay. The markets are not very healthy at the moment, and I'm not telling you to get out or liquidate, because again, I don't do that. I don't believe in that. I believe in, you know, moving nicely along and learning how to compound and turn that portfolio into a money generator. But, you know, you gotta ask yourself when you see markets as they sit, and you gotta say, are we really justified being at these levels? Now, of course, the market is always right. So we're not going to tell you that you should not be in at all, because the markets are going up. So I'm not going to tell you that it's wrong. The market is never wrong. The market is a mechanism that is run by the people. Okay, it's run by money. It's run by order flow. So to ever think or say that the market is wrong would be something that should not be ever be said. And I've heard it said before, but The market is never wrong. It may be doing things that you don't think are correct, but it is never wrong. And I think one of the signs you look for, you know, if you look around at different indices and you look at different things, I think one of the key takeaways to take away is the when the bond market, the U.S. dollar, and the equity market are all going in the same direction, that's an immediate sign or a warning to you saying, hey, something's wrong here. Now, what is the something wrong? Well, the something wrong is just, it's simple. Okay. Those are almost inverse asset classes. Okay. If you remember the theory that when the world is in trouble, when people are looking for safety, they go to the U.S. dollar and the U.S. Treasury market. And when they're ready to be more aggressive or the risk on trade, they're going into the equity market. So to see money flowing into all three is not a realistic idea of that that's going to continue. Now, again, we can have it for a day or two, but overall, that has to change. And, of course, we will see the backing or the back going down of one of the indexes. I don't know which one it was. I mean, I can't tell you. I don't make those types of predictions because for a day or two, anything can be a part of the case. But as we look going forward, of course, we've got jobs this week going to be a big number. Now, is it really a big number? And I guess that's really the question that we need to ask. Does it really mean anything? And currently, the way that, number one, it's reported, number two, it's interpreted, and number three, the actual fulfilling is not really any big deal. Because the jobs that are being created are not good jobs. They're just not. They're just, you can't put in service jobs, minimum wage jobs, and say that they're good jobs. So the justification that the growth is good and things are fine and jobs are getting better and our unemployment's only 5% is really silly. Okay. Now, again, we can't fight that. We can't say that that won't be okay. But we do know that overall, you can see by the sales, you can see by the supply-demand models, you can see by what's going on across the globe that they're not very good. But of course, if you listen to our people celebrate it, they tell you that it's been unbelievable. And again, you can't, the number of layoffs you've had in good paying jobs versus the numbers that we're bringing in and what they're getting paid, I guarantee the layoffs are making more than the ones that are getting hired. So that's a problem. So we've got a real cross message. And I think that's probably the bigger problem is the way that we report things, because everything is reported to in the favor of the organization that's reporting it. And it becomes rather problematic as we look at it, because again, just look around. We don't have to be rocket scientists here to figure out that things are not great. Okay. But again, that's where we talk about Wall Street and Main Street are not related whatsoever. Okay. And the artificial building of what we've seen here is not any great shakes. What we want to look for is we need to see some real growth and some real company earnings. And, you know, maybe we'll see it. And again, I'm all for it. I'm not against it. I want to see the markets grow. But I you can see the panic in the streets, the blood curdling from starting with Japan. And don't be surprised that there won't be more behind this, because of course we know that this is just the start, and that is more the problem, is who's next and will it be us? Will we have a QE4? There's a lot of things to think about out there, and it's all rather tenuous and a little scary at best. I just want to make sure that you, my faithful listeners, are protected. I want you to check out my hedge program at BubbaTrading.com, but more importantly, I want you to, if you miss a show, be able to go to libertytalk.fm and get it on demand. This right, is The Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Wars. I'm going to stop here for a break, and I'll be right back. The Bubba Show.
Stay with me, man. Listen up. This is philosophical.
Welcome back. back to the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz, and it's time for the one, the only, the birthday girl, Jane King from Lila Max Media, the Kaching Report. Happy birthday, Jane King. Welcome aboard.
Oh, thank you, Todd. Yes, you know, it's on a Tuesday this year, so, I mean, you know, it's kind of like I get halfway through the day, I'm like, oh, yeah, it's my birthday. I'm so busy. But, yeah, it's a nice birthday, and another one bites the dust,
you
I
know,
guess.
It's 29 again, and that's all good. And so, Jane, we've got lots of stuff going on. You've had a Apple that had only reported an $18 billion quarter, but not good enough for Wall Street. And, of course, missed on expectations, but, of course, the biggest quarter in the history of any corporation. And then, of course, you had the Federal Reserve. And then you had, of course, Facebook earnings. And a lot of big things happening. But really, is there anything that to you says that we've seen a turnaround or a change in the overall economy?
No, I don't think so. In fact, I think we're looking at probably more of a slowdown than what we thought late last year. But yeah, you're right. I mean, Apple, boy, what have you done for me lately? I mean, Wall Street is like, they expect this company to just continually prop out amazing products and sell them at record levels. So it's, you know, nobody can sustain that, not even Apple. So it's, you know, not surprising that iPhone sales are slowing down. Although, you know, they probably do have to come up with some new, innovative new products in order to keep Apple what it is. I mean, at some point in the next year or so. Facebook, just amazing. Mark Zuckerberg, now the sixth richest person in the world. He surpassed Larry Ellison with the run-up in Facebook stock price after the earnings report was released. So they're turning in amazing numbers again, really driven by mobile ad sales. But we still got these lingering things, I mean, going on. We've still got just the general, you know, malaise that's going on in the market. We've got too much debt. Oil prices down. China. So the macro things are still a problem.
So explain to me this, Jane. What does the Fed mean when they continue to say they're data dependent? I mean, we can see the data. You and I can see the data that things are slowing, that things aren't good. I mean, you don't have to be a rocket scientist to understand that things are not good. I mean, when major economies continue to devalue currency, they're just saying, hey, we got a problem. We need to make an adjustment. So what data are they depending on? I don't get it. And maybe you can help clarify that for me. What is it?
Well, I mean, who knows what is going on in the central bank's mind, but I'm sure it involves jobs at some point, high wages, and inflation. I think, you know, they look and see, you know, how much wiggle room they have to play around with interest rates. But I loved after the Fed meeting where they didn't raise interest rates, which, of course, how would they dare after what we've been through? I mean, can you imagine how disastrous that would be? But that Wall Street was upset that they did not rule out an interest rate hike in March. Like, of course they didn't rule. I mean, did you really expect them to rule that out in January? I mean, never has the Fed done that, and never will they. So I just think it's funny how they do entirely what's expected, but still the market sells out.
Well, I mean, it's basically, you know, obviously we're a buy the rumor, sell the news, and we got used to that free money. You know, not us, but the bigger guys got used to that free cash and that money flowing in. So, Jay, when you look around, and I want to get your opinion on this as well. Everybody keeps saying that oil and the markets go the same way, and I say they're not even really related from that standpoint, and that's an incorrect statement. I believe that oil is a commodity that trades, and when it's in demand, it'll go higher. When it's not in demand, it'll go lower. And in the meantime, with the strength of the U.S. dollar, it makes it harder for it to go higher here. But I do think it's at a pretty good level. I own it, I'm buying it. But overall, in your opinion, are they actually linked? I mean, if oil is going up, is the market going to go up, or is that poppycock?
Well, we have seen them move in tandem lately, although, you know, as we know from watching markets over the years, that can change on a dime. You know, I think it depends more on the macroeconomic situation. And, you know, in the 90s, oil was down, but stocks were hitting record highs. But I think this time around, people are fearful that oil is signaling a slowdown. And people aren't taking the money that they're saving and spending it on stuff. I mean, they might be spending it on experiences. There is some evidence of that, you know, flight travel was at a record last year. Restaurants were up. But as far as just going to the store and buying more stuff, people aren't really doing that. And, you know, I think that, you know, this time around, stocks are looking for oil as an early indicator to a global recession. And that was what upset things so much earlier this year. But it seems to have stabilized, at least for this week. So we'll see. But interesting, just last week, BP's boss said he wouldn't rule out $10 a barrel oil, which is incredible. And oil, by the way, is a supply situation. It's an oversupply situation, not a demand situation. So that kind of changes the dynamic a little bit. So maybe they'll decouple here at some point, but it's certainly been the case so far in January that stocks have followed oil.
Now, don't you think that part of it is really, it's more about a job story, because obviously falling oil prices will mean maybe some defaults on loans. It means less people working. But that isn't that the story throughout the entire commodity space, not just oil? I mean, are not all of our, I mean, farmers, are they're not looking for farmhands right now? I mean, they're lucky if they're going to, if they're not going to lose too much money this year. So isn't that more the story? It's a commodity story and a dollar story versus just the oil.
Yeah, well, we know that all the commodities have suffered over the past couple of years. And, yeah, I mean, it's, you know, these small regional farm lenders, the energy lenders. I mean, some of the banks have already in their earnings reports said, you know, they have exposure to the energy industry. You know, you look at North Dakota and Texas, and especially some of those regional banks, I'm sure have got to be hurt by this. And, you know, Texas has laid off quite a bit of people, but they have a pretty diverse economy. Toyota's headquarters there, they've got the airlines, they've got retail, they've got technology. So it wouldn't have been hit, not being hit as hard as it was, there would have been in the 1980s, for example. But North Dakota, you know, they're dependent on fracking business. I mean, they were just gangbusters there for a while, and but that slowed down there for them. They're fiscally responsible people in North Dakota, so they're protected. They've been wise with their money. So, but yeah, I mean, if this starts to have more of a ripple effect among more jobs, more banks, then that's going to be a big problem.
So, you know, we look around, and of course we talk about, you know, the economy and what's going on. So now you're pretty diverse. Is there anywhere in the country that you're seeing much better? And then on the other side, is there any in the place in the economy, in the world, that you're seeing that is much worse?
Well, you know, it's interesting because I talk to a lot of different cities, and you know, San Francisco, of course, is doing really well right now, but hey, they're doing so well, you're almost scared that, you know, things are going to turn around for them, that it's a bubble in Silicon Valley. Of course, Facebook's earnings don't signal that at all. But some of the smaller companies, you worry a little bit about the Bay Area. Texas always seems to be doing well. And they've got a lot of diversity there. Austin's doing well. San Antonio's doing well. Dallas is doing well. Houston, despite energy, is still hanging in there. So Texas seems to be doing okay. And New York, I mean, it's exposed to Wall Street and the banks, but it's diversified enough that it's hanging in there too. So, you know, there's pockets of weakness, like in these energy areas and the commodity areas, but overall, some other areas are holding steady for the moment. But you never know. It seems like we're in the kind of environment where there could be a surprise or two that would come up this year.
Would you think that would be a good surprise or a bad surprise?
No, I think it'd be a bad surprise. And I don't know where it would come from. The debt levels scare me to death. I feel like they're just too big. And if we would have some kind of downturn or a big terrorist attack or something, we wouldn't be able to handle it, because just there's too much debt on every level, consumer all the way to government. And, you know, to me, that's my biggest fear. And, I mean, you never know what's going to happen. I mean, that's, you know, the nature of the market is these things happen with surprises. But it just feels like a kind of environment where things are a little strange. Presidential election's a little strange. You know, it's the world's a little strange. So,
everything's a little strange, and that really is, I think, more the story is the strangeness of what's happening. And just really my opinion is just that it's the unwillingness for the economists to admit that there is actually a problem, and that even though jobs unemployment rate is 5%, it really is not a very good 5%. But Jane King, as always, you bring good things to light. Happy birthday, and make another 29, and keep up the great work. We love having you on. It's always refreshing to have somebody on like you. So thank you so much for being here. Our friend Jane King, we do enjoy having her on. She does a lot of good work, Lila Max Media. the Ka-Ching Report. And, you know, it's always good because she gives you a good perspective because she's got, she lives in New York now. She's from the Midwest and has the really good perspective of the whole situation. So that's always a great thing. We're going to get ready to stop by for a break. Make sure you go check out BubbaTrading.com. We've got great things on there for you. We've got some great products, but we also do a lot of great writing. So please check that out. This is The Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz. You miss the show? See you right after the break. The Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz. So see you later.
Margie said, Roy, you ain't listening.
Trust. For nearly four decades, that is the reputation Roberts & Roberts Brokerage has forged with their customers. Now, with their full e-commerce website, rrbi.co, it's easier than ever to buy or sell precious metals via Bitcoin or major credit card. Visit them online at rrbi.co or call 800-874-9760 to speak with an experienced professional today. Roberts & Roberts, when you're serious about precious metals.
What's up, everybody? Bubba here. It's finally here. The long-awaited Bubba Report, bringing you news from all the trading floors across the globe. We've got Scott Cialdini, the cow guy, as seen on CNBC, Fox, and Bloomberg. We've got Keith Bliss, CNBC, Fox, and a floor trader at the New York Stock Exchange. We've got The Badger, who writes the hot topics in the political news. We've got myself putting together my own unique indexes that will help you give you a better idea of what's going on in the market. All you need to do to get a hold of the Bubba Report is go to thebubbashow.org and sign up for the newsletter, or you can email me direct at bubba@thebubbashow.org. We want you to have this report because we've got over 150 years of experience talking about markets, getting ready for the trading, and puts you in the best position to have successful. So email me at bubba@thebubbashow.org to get a copy of your report, or go right to the website, thebubbashow.org. Make sure you get it. It's a must-have for every investor and trader. The Bubba Report. Welcome back to The Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz, and it's time for the one, the only, Mike McClone, an analyst that we bring in who is one of the best at reading the markets. And, of course, he told us about the Bank of Japan and their negative night. But what did you think of that, my friend? Welcome aboard.
Yeah, well, thanks. I certainly didn't tell you about that. I listened to Mr. Kuroda for what he said at the in Davos, and they didn't give any hint. He didn't give any hint of going to negative rates. But I think this is classically a really clear indication of accelerating currency wars. And by currency wars, I mean virtually every country in the world now is trying to do whatever they can to lower the value of their currency, lower their interest rates, create inflation. There's no place to import inflation from. And by default, it's becoming currency wars, because a country with a strong currency is the one who's going to really have a hard time. In that case, it's the U.S. It's certainly if they're exporting nations. Now, Japan's an exporting nation. China's an exporting nation. Most emerging markets are exporting nations. So to me, it's just a classic example of the next, I hate to use the term war, but it's definitely a war. This is just the next step in what you and I have discussed for a while. This is probably going to get worse before it gets better.
Well, it's a next step in the collapsing economies around the world. I mean, we can look at it any way we want, but this is not a healthy sign, and this is not a good sign fundamentally for the world economy. And this is more of the Federal Reserve and central banks around the world not having any clue how to maneuver out of a situation they put themselves into because they couldn't figure it out in the first place. So again, I know you defend them. I don't. I think that they're crap and they've done a horrible job. And I think this is just a bigger indication of what a rotten job they've done. You want to take the other side of that trade?
Oh, I appreciate you mentioning that, because I defend Bernanke and a lot of actions he took when things went really bad. And, you know, I read his book. I'm a big fan. But what I don't defend, where I think he went wrong, was when he started QE3. And that is the problem when I see now. And I'll just reiterate a little bit. QE3 was started in September of 2012 when the S&P was at 1,400. And in his book, he pointed out we were concerned about how slow things were picking up. He was learning about long-term economic macroeconomic unemployment. You know, long-term employment is running 7.5%. And you and I would say, well, come on, we got to let the organic economy take over. But by doing so, really accelerating QE, he really accelerated and brought forward a lot of the returns in the S&P 500. So the S&P 500 essentially rallied from around 1,400 to 2,100, and we're at 1,900 now. And that, to me, is what where they went wrong. And we all know as traders, we make mistakes. They are somewhat being traders. When you're a trader, you stop yourself out and you move on. As you say, keep your tight stops tight. And I think that was a big mistake, and now we're going to be hitting the stop. And the stop is mean reversion. So this is what the big, and this is just another acceleration part of it. Now, the year started out really bad. The, you know, the S&P 500 has gone down quite a bit. I just want to go over some of the things that market's done since the last Fed tightening and give us an indication of what's happened and what's been happening and what it's going to take. So first of all, since the Fed tightened, they did this on December 16th. The S&P 500 is down 6%, but the IWM, which is a small cap ETF, is down 10%. That's an indication that small companies and people are selling are doing a lot worse. And that shouldn't be the case, but it's usually a bad indication. Gold's up 4%. The thing that's up the most is TLT. That's the U.S. Bond Index. And that's where you and I still agree completely. And that's the indication that even though the Fed's been raising rates, yields have been declining. That's a major indication of economic calamity ahead. And also a key thing that's declined is the HYG. So when TLT goes up and HYG goes down, HYG is a high yield index. That's a sign of widening spreads and major problems in the market. Now I can go on a little bit. I'll stop there because I want to get into what's happened and the difference between high yield and treasuries and how that looks compared to 2008.
Well, go for it then. I don't want to stop you now. You're on a roll.
Yeah, I'm on a roll, but I had to take a breath. And I love how you counterpoint something because it creates a great conversation. So basically, let's just explain this. HYG, again, is the high-yield ETF. I love to watch it because it gives us a good – it's basically the junk bond ETF. And TLT is U.S. Treasuries. Now, that's the one that I've been recommending for 2 years, and I just can't get away from how that just keeps going up in price when everybody else says it should be going down in price. So to get an indication of the economy, you take the HYG, which is the high yield, and divide by TLT. When that spread's going higher, when the bond, junk bonds are outperforming, that's a good sign. It's usually the economy is doing better. What's been happening since 2011, this spread has peaked. Means U.S. Treasury bonds, TLT, have been outperforming HYG. HYG has been going down. The problem is that spread is right near the low from 2008, and it's a major indication of some big problems. And if you look at it overlaid with the S&P 500, it just shows the S&P 500 is probably way extended too high. And when people say, I keep hearing these comments, so what's happening? What's causing the market to go down? And you and I will say, well, it's really more of a factor of what caused the market to go up going away. And that's what's happened in 2016. And I don't think we're going to have any resolution of this problem until the market goes down, because we know what's going to happen. If it continues to go up, the Fed's going to continue to tighten. And they said that. And that's how we got here in the first place, was the opposite of those excessive Fed easing. So I'm getting more and more concerned about the U.S. equity market, which I think will be the straw and the camel's back that can break down the economy when it goes down. And I didn't say if, because it always will go down at some point. I just think it's happening now.
Well, it's already broken down. Again, if you look at Wall Street versus Main Street, they're not at all related. They have nothing to do with each other. It's a bunch of BS. But here we are at a market that again gets excited when we have intervention from some idiot that decides that they want to go to negative rates. I mean, now, have we not learned? I mean, Japan started this, I believe it was 1995. Is that correct? Or 1990?
Yeah, it was a little bit early. It was a little bit early. It was late 80s. But that's a key point. I'm glad you mentioned it, because in 1995, I ran the night desk out of New York for my firm, which meant that I was making markets in U.S. Treasuries, trading them, and trading and making markets in Japanese government bonds. I remember everybody I spoke to that said, we are short the Japanese bond market and we're happy. And that's a classic indication of them being wrong, and they were all wrong. That's when the Japanese bond 10-year note was yielding about 1.2%. Now it's yielding, I think, 0.1%. it's just an indication the markets, prices kept going up, yields kept going down, and now it's just accelerating to the rest of the world, and I don't see why or how I'm smart enough or the Fed's smart enough to pick a bottom in that trend. And the key thing is they've done the opposite. One thing you just said is Wall Street did versus Main Street, and a key thing that, you know, I've done some research, added up my research, and I wanted to, so I compared household U.S. income, which is average household income, U.S. income, versus the S&P 500. S&P 500 is Wall Street. How U.S. household income is an indication of how the average household is doing in this country. And that ratio has a tendency to go up and down, but it's basically the highest ever. I mean, the S&P 500 it just recently got to the highest ever ratio versus household income in its history. Now, my data only goes back to 1982, but that's pretty good long time. 30 years of data is pretty good data.
Well, I mean, again, this is, again, my point of the horrible job. You know, it's like Lemony Snicket's horrible, rotten, lousy, bad day. I mean, you know, you have these people that are running the show, and unfortunately, they have no idea of what they're doing. Again, I'm going to go back to that, because until somebody proves me wrong, I have to continue to say, now you're giving me data that supports my opinion that they're imbeciles. And I know you won't say that. And I don't want to put you in that position. Okay. I very clearly, Mike McClellan does not believe that, nor is he saying that. But again, that goes back to the fact that they have no clue as to what they're doing. I mean, this is a perfect example. Japan, 30 years of trying to manipulate their economy, and yet they still can't get it right. I mean, what is the best solution? You and I know what it is, but go ahead, tell me.
Well, and that's why I say I'd let the smarter people figure that out, like the people who are, to me, I don't know how to fix this situation in Japan, and I'm less certain what to do here, but I think of more of it, that's not the goal here. My goal is to do the best I can for myself, being selfish, and for our listeners, to make sure we do not get hurt in this environment in our investments, and maybe we can benefit just by being prudent with our investments in this environment. So the way I look at it is, what should we do? What's the right thing to do with our assets? And the first thing I would say still is the same: cash is king in a global inflationary environment. Now, no one in Wall Street likes that. We're not Wall Street, because they can't sell product. And the thing I still like, and some investments are still attractive, U.S. Treasury bonds, gold. Gold's up 4% since the Fed started tightening. And one thing I need to really be careful about, and just want to point out, I just did, you know, just one thing I'd like to do is obviously analysis, but if you just look at the total returns since the Fed tightened on December 16th, one thing I wanted to point out is, you look at the price of crude oil. Since that day, the front month crude oil is down only 5%. Now, that's crude oil you hear quoted every day, but the number one ETF that tracks crude oil, which is called USO, that's down 12%, more than double the total return of crude oil. Because this, always remember, when you invest in certain things, know what you're investing in commodities. You can't always buy a commodity because you have to use a product that tracks the futures, unless you're buying something like gold or silver that tracks the physical.
All right, well, we're going to come back with Mike McClellan as I batter him here. I saw a mistake dinner because he got me right, even though he knows now that I was actually correct in my opinion. Just, I got beaten out by somebody to try to prove a point. But we'll come back and talk about it. And remember, those opinions, those vicious attacks are mine, not Mike's. I want to make sure we understand that. He is a supporter or whatever. We'll get him a jock strap for his athletic support of the Federal Reserve. This is The Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horowitz. I'm with my friend Mike McClellan, who does know it. If you miss a show, libertytalk.fm. You can always get it on demand. And we will be back after the break with more from our guy, Mike McClellan. This is The Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz will be right back after the break. The Bubba Show. Welcome back to The Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz again, making you understand that some of these vicious comments are mine, not Mike's. But Mike McClellan, I lost the steak dinner to you. Fortunately, I didn't have to pay because I have to finance it still. But here we are, and we're now a second meeting past the rate hike in which you won that steak dinner. And you and I both know it was the wrong thing to do. And, of course, this is being proven more correctly by what the BOJ did, what Mario Draghi's doing, and because of what everybody else is doing. I know that you're dying to yell at me and tell me I'm wrong. So go ahead, take it away, young man.
Well, that's one of my rules in life. And I remember one of the best bosses I ever had when I was a young kid working at the Park District was you should never have to say, I told you so to anyone, and I don't mean that in this case. In this case, we just had a disagreement with actual fact that they would tighten or not. And you, in my opinion, were right. They should not have tightened. But I just, you know, took them for their signal, being an ex-bond trader, said, yes, they're going to tighten. I'm almost certain it's going to be a mistake. Well, I'm not certain about anything, but I have confidence it's going to be a mistake, and that's where we have to move forward. Unfortunately, they did tighten, and as we pointed out in the earlier half, how much markets have moved since they have tightened. And the biggest thing now is I expect in the near future that they will probably have to take that tightening back and go back to easing, unfortunately, which will destroy the credibility of them if they have to do that, and will hurt from the market standpoint. It'll ruin the market's confidence, and that's the worst thing you can have at any type of financial markets is negative or lack of consumer sentiment or confidence. And that's what I think is happening now. People are starting to get the fact the Fed did too much, there's not much more they can do, and the markets are off size. So that's where I'm really worried, and that's where I want to think, okay, what can we do to protect ourselves? Get out of the stock market and be very light, underweight stocks, overweight protection assets like bonds and treasury and gold. And so far, so good. And as far as the Fed's going, let's look back. The market's gone. Stock market's gone very far when the Fed was easing. Now let's look forward. Corporate profits are declining. Not only declining, earnings estimates for next year for the S&P 500 are negative. That hasn't happened in 4 years. The Fed has said, and we know this, if the market goes up, they're going to tighten. Okay, that's a double negative. The only way, I think, for the Fed to come back and not tighten into ease is for the market to go down, and that's what's happening, and that's what I'm afraid will happen. That was actually my key takeaway from reading Ben Bernanke's book, that the stock market right now, the U.S. stock market, is about almost as overextended as the housing market was in 2006.
Well, oxymoron, which is what they've done. We can take off the oxy part. But so now I look and I hear you. And I hear what you're saying, but we know, again, there is one solution to the problem. And the one solution is to let the frickin' markets trade by themselves and to establish what the right numbers are. Because apparently, the folks in charge, the big bosses up there, are not doing the proper thing here. Now, again, you tell me why I'm wrong, but I'm going back. I was always on the fence of the original deal in 08, and now I'm convinced that I was right, that they should have done nothing and let the banks that couldn't make it collapse. I mean, again, because we've gone no farther, and the worst part of it is, Mike, is that there's a collapse coming, because you cannot kick the can down the road year after year, day after day, and have your Federal Reserve day trading the stock market, because at the end of the day, we know that although it's supposed to be a completely private and uninvolved industry, we know that the banks own part of the Federal Reserve and the government owns the other part of it. So even though it's a private institution, it has influences beyond what it's supposed to have, and it's not doing the job that it's intended to do, which is strictly monetary policy. They have now gotten involved in trading the stock market, and that's wrong, which means that somewhere, and again, who knows when, but somewhere, the collapse is going to be harder and bigger than it was in 2008. What say you?
Unfortunately, I'm afraid that's going to happen. The average economist will put a probability. I'm a strategist. We're more strategists. I don't want to put a probability. I want to just make sure I protect from that happening. I agree with you. I think the biggest thing that I look that's offsides now is the U.S. stock market. And I keep watching for different signals for what it's going to take and what will change. Now, one thing I think you said that makes the most point is, to put it in different words, we always, I think, in our standpoint, we want markets to seek their own levels. And that makes a lot of sense. And that's where I think the U.S. Federal Reserve went wrong when they did QE3, because they really goosed the market and brought back all these forward returns. And the biggest problem with things like this is mean reversion. Let's give you an example. 1987, that was simply a mean reversion event. 2008 was a mean reversion event in the housing market. Unfortunately, things get out of hand. But the problem is now it's almost impossible globally to let markets seek their own levels, because look what's happening. The Japanese are having negative interest rates. The Europeans have negative interest rates. The Chinese are devaluing your currency. And everybody in the world has started this war. And we're the only ones, only major country that hasn't. So it's bid the U.S. dollar. But what's going to happen? It's almost has to, something has to give and break, which means the key thing to watch, I think, is when the U.S. Federal Reserve capitulates, and the key thing might be when the U.S. dollar starts breaking. Now, so far last week, I like to watch the UUP index. It's the U.S. dollar ETF. Now, it went up a little bit again. It still looks like it's ready to break out. To me, though, that's the problem with seeking the own levels. The Fed is stuck, and them tightening when the rest of the world easing is probably not going to end well, which still makes me think that one of the best investments we should be in with our own money is U.S. Treasury bonds.
Now, everybody knows how much I hate to be long treasuries at these levels, but I have said on my weekly call that, hey, you can't sell them. You'd be as bad as the Fed if you sold them here. I'm not telling everybody to jump in and buy them, but you cannot be short treasuries. And I got to ask you this. Now, you've been doing this for a long time. You're a veteran. Okay. And we saw something interesting on Friday. The dollar was exploding to the upside. The bonds were exploding to the upside. And the stock market was exploding to the upside. Now, one of those three, or two of the three, have to be wrong. But one of the three has to be wrong for sure, 100%. What do you think about that, and what is your opinion?
Well, yeah, I think the stock market had a pretty significant short covering rally, and that's one thing we always need to warn our listeners about, is bear markets can take money from anybody or everybody. They are most notorious for high volatility. One of the biggest bear market rallies ever was in 2008 during the crisis. It was September 15th or so when the SEC put out the Do Not Short list. Massive short covering rally in the S&P 500. You took out all the shorts. It went up to around 1,200, and guess where it ended the year? Down, got close to 600-700. It dropped almost 50%. That's how markets go down. You take out the shorts. And I think that's what happened Friday. So let me go, and so I think the biggest vulnerability remains U.S. stock market. So it's just the people who say to me you can't buy U.S. Treasury bonds have been saying that for the last 3 years, yet the TLT is up almost 40%. They always say, I remember being on a trading desk, and they would say, you know, when you'd say express a bullish opinion on the Treasury bond market, and someone would say, oh, would you lend your money to the government for 6% for 30 years? Well, now that's down to 2.5%. Looks at the 10-year note as 1.92%, but compare this to the rest of the world. U.S. Treasury 10-year notes are 1.92%. That's the safest investment in the entire world, bar none. Look at Canada, 1.22%. That's 70 basis points less. Look at the United Kingdom. You know, very similar, nowhere near as safe as the U.S., but 1.56. Let's look at France, 0.6. How about Italy? Not the safest place in the world for your money. And Spain, 1.5%. So that's my point, is the U.S. Treasury market is still one of the most offsides, valuable, I think, attractive investments in the entire world. And for it not to work, we have to get some pretty significant real inflation, and all the indicators are still pointing towards disinflation, potentially deflation, and maybe even a lot worse. So I still look at it as, gosh, I'd love to be able to look back and say, I don't like losing money, but if I lose money in that investment because the whole world has improved and we finally got back to where things were, you know, 20 years ago, and we worried about inflation, amen.
Well, as I will put on my disclaimer once again, because again, I don't like it. I hate what's going on. I think it's horrible. And I think, unfortunately, the average guy is going to get it slammed to, you know, where, but our guy, Mike McClone, you got to respect the man's opinion. He brings it. He brings his A game every time he's on with me here. And Mike, always a pleasure to have you on. You really bring, as GE, you bring good things to light.
Thank you very much, Don. I appreciate it. I enjoy being on. I just, you know, I think you and I have one thing in common. We just want to help people with some of the knowledge we've learned. A lot of it's from, you got to ignore some of these people who are trying to sell you products, which most of Wall Street is.
That's right. And they always tell you things, because if your money ain't working, they ain't making money. And that's the way it goes. But hey, you know, that's why we had the special hedging class, which you can see at BubbaTrading.com, and as well as for farmers as well, because we help you with crops there at the same time. We understand it. We know how the model works. But that'll take us to the end of another great Bubba show. Mike McClone was with us, and we will be back tomorrow. Same time, same station. Make sure you miss an episode. LibertyTalk.fm on demand. This is the Bubba Show. Top Bubba Horvitz. Ever great to everybody. We'll see you back here tomorrow. Same time, same station. The Bubba Show. And put some feel good in my soul.
Revolutionary Talk for Revolutionary Times. Liberty Talk FM.